This is District Sentinel Radio. It's your daily newscast featuring reporting from the left. I'm Sam Sachs.
I'm Sam Knight.
We're in Washington, D.C. We're in the Harper's a Good Girl studios. Check out the website, districtsentinel.com. Sam Knight.
What's up?
I spent the night with George Will last night.
Did he?
I didn't sleep over. I mean, I spent a few hours at the baseball park with him when I went to the Nats game.
You saw him?
He was sitting right behind me.
Wow.
I was sitting three rows off the Nats dugout.
Great seats.
Very lucky. I have a very generous friend. And I look behind me and there's George Will. And of course, I took to Twitter about it and several people told me to, tell him to fuck off. But George Will actually has good opinions on baseball. And we were at a baseball game and I didn't want to embarrass the people I was with. So I behaved myself all night.
I probably would have done the same in terms of behaving myself. I'm not going to pretend like I would have turned around and heckled George Will.
Yeah.
Although I might have, you know, depending on the beer intake. Although
he was also there with his son, so I don't know.
Maybe what I would have done, though, is for one of, like, the four stand-up-for-the-troop things, like very – like demonstrably like kept seated and like turn around and like stare at him, be like, what are you going to do about it?
I've already told this story on there multiple times. I'm not going to tell it again, but I've had a few issues at Nats Stadium with the salute to the troops tributes. And you can listen to previous episodes to learn more about that. It's Tuesday, June 27th, 2017. Here's the news.
Owned. The Trump administration and Senate Republicans were hoping to get their Obamacare repeal passed before the 4th of July recess. They'd been aiming for a vote on Thursday, circumventing hearings and a committee vote, writing legislation entirely in secret.
And reintroducing the legislation again yesterday with changes.
But the vote Thursday will not happen, a day after the Congressional Budget Office said that their proposal would result in 22 million Americans losing health insurance by 2026. Republicans have abandoned their plans to vote on health care this week. The reason why? They simply couldn't get the votes to guarantee it would pass. As we had noted, four conservative senators didn't think it went far enough. Dean Heller of Nevada thought it went too far, and he was joined last night by Senator Susan Collins, who said she would oppose a motion to proceed on a vote. So today, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called off plans to ram through the bill. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer reacting to the news this afternoon.
We know the fight is not over. That is for sure. We're not resting on any laurels, nor do we feel any sense yet of accomplishment, other than we are making progress because the American people are listening to our arguments. Over the next couple of weeks, we know that Leader McConnell will try to use a slush fund to buy off Republicans, cut backroom deals to try and get this thing done. So we're going to watch this bill and all the machinations, behind closed doors as they might be, like a hawk.
Indeed, it seems almost certain that Republicans will have to use buy-offs to get any kind of bill passed. Their laissez-faire mentality is completely bankrupt, making elite coastal liberals actually seem like they're in touch. Before Thursday's vote was called off, for example, Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, was asking Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta to defend Republicans' health care reform push. Here's an exchange they had this morning.
So I do think it's important to provide individuals with choice.
But you're not suggesting that of the 22 million people that will lose insurance, the majority of those people are choosing to lose insurance.
What I'm suggesting is that we have a healthcare system that imposes a number of mandates.
Of course, the countries that impose the most stringent mandates, i.e. those that make healthcare a human right, well, they actually tend to spend less on healthcare as a percentage of GDP while seeing better outcomes, i.e. higher life expectancy. To that end, there was some good news today. Elizabeth Warren, a likely presidential candidate, she came out hard in favor of single payer. I mean, she's come out in favor of it before, but damn, she went hard today. Unlike Nancy Pelosi, Warren said that Dems should make the policy a key platform both in 2018 and in 2020. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Warren said the following, quote, "President Obama tried to move us forward with health care coverage by using a conservative model that came from one of the conservative think tanks that had been advanced by a Republican governor in Massachusetts. Now it's time for the next step, and the next step is single payer."
Yeah, she's right on all fronts. The next step is single payer, and the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, was a Republican health care plan. It was Nixon who pushed for employer mandates. It was the Heritage Foundation in the early 1990s that pushed for an individual mandate. These are all Republican ideas.
It was Romney Care. It was great.
It provided the basis for Republican Governor Romney Care to put it in place.
Yeah, it was great seeing him squirm about that in 2012. Well, I thought it made sense for Massachusetts, but it doesn't make sense for the whole country.
Ever since Edward Snowden revealed the scope of surveillance abuses by the U.S. government in 2014, privacy advocates and civil rights groups have been clamoring for reform. They got some reform in 2015 with the passage of the USA Freedom Act, which altered the government phone metadata collection program. But another big spying authority is expiring at the end of the year, Section 702 FISA, and reformers see another opportunity to tighten up that program. 702 FISA allows for warrantless collection against individuals overseas. The government does this through direct relationships with internet companies and by sucking off internet data. Maybe I should change that.
Hi, I'm the sheriff of sucking off internet data. I'm here to suck off your internet data.
Maybe I should say siphoning off internet data from fiber optic cables that are just running all around the world. Problem is, this sort of collection results in American citizens' data being collected too. That data is stored in repositories at the NSA. It can be searched down the road. Now, this is something that hasn't concerned spy hawks like Lindsey Graham at all. He's been an ardent defender of the intel community since Snowden, despite the prospect that thousands, maybe millions of U.S. citizens are being indirectly spied on by the U.S. government. But what does concern Graham? The prospect that he personally may have had his communications collected, particularly after the whole Michael Flynn affair, even though Michael Flynn probably had his communications incidentally collected under an authority different than Section 702, we're still talking about incidental collection. Here was Lindsey Graham's line of questioning during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Tuesday, which was focused on 702 reauthorization.
Do I have the legal right as a United States senator to find out if my government is monitoring a conversation between me and a foreign leader? And if anybody had access to that conversation? Am I ever going to get to know the basic facts? Because if I'm going to be monitored overseas, maybe there's a good reason to monitor the person I'm talking to. I just want to know what consequence as a senator flows my way. If somebody in my own administration doesn't like me, the other administration outside of my party doesn't like me, should I be worried about that conversation following in the hands of political people that may one day be used against me?
So as career intelligence professional, Senator, I don't think you should be concerned because
answer my question then.
Well, if Senator Graham's done nothing wrong, then he has nothing to fear, right? Isn't that what dipshits like him have been saying for fucking years?
Yes, it is. Graham was getting so fired up about the prospect that he might be spied on that he went over his allotted time. But his fellow Republican, the chairman of the committee, Chuck Grassley, thought the line of questioning was so important that it had to continue.
And if you're not going to give it to me, tell me why.
I'm not stopping you. I just want to. I wish my colleagues would appreciate what he's trying to do here and give him a little extra time. Yes, of course. So proceed.
What's the deal?
In other words, I want you to proceed until
you
get an answer.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if there's anything in this country people are entitled to, it's entitled to at least an answer to their question.
I'm violently agreeing with you. So, if I were you, I'd answer my question because he's mad.
Old Chuck Grassley, I think when we do our next installment of District Sentinel t-shirts, we should replace John McCain with Chuck Grassley on the Never Been Mad t-shirt. Now, if only Grassley and Graham were this fired up about Section 702 before all the Flynn stuff went down, when just average folks were concerned about being surveillance targets. Here's Senator Dick Durbin chiming in.
Did you hear the exchange with Senator Lindsey Graham? Did you note the emotion in his voice as he thought about the possibility that his privacy was being invaded by his government? That someone might use that information through 702 against him as a United States senator? You just witnessed something which is rare in the United States Senate. This chairman rightly said, let's extend the time of the senator to keep asking, because we're all concerned about that, because it's our privacy that Senator Graham has raised. But what about the privacy of the Americans who are not in this room? Well, now we run into another problem. Senator Franken asked you the most basic information. How many Americans have been swept up into this 702? You can't tell us. How are we supposed to believe that transparency is really the guiding principle and that we have such great data collection if you can't even identify for us how many Americans have been innocently swept up into this effort?
Senator Durbin making some good-ass points there. Now, along with the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Intelligence Committee also holds jurisdiction over FISA reauthorization. Republican members of the Intel panel have introduced legislation that would grant a clean extension of Section 702 and then just remove any future sunset provisions. So we'd have Section 702 forever. Senator Dianne Feinstein, the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee, a member also of the Intelligence Committee, and a reliable spy hawk, said Tuesday that that proposal was a non-starter. Reading her quote, I believe any reauthorization should include a sunset provision, and without it, it will not have my support.
You know, we don't have, as you noted, we don't have a number on incidental collections under 702. We might never get a number. I don't know if it's even technically possible to sort of siphon it out.
They claim it's not technically possible, but there's evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, and that part especially wouldn't surprise me if they were deliberately obscuring it, especially because when Ron Wyden found out about collection under 215, he got clapper to perjure himself in front of Congress.
Yeah.
But I guess I just wanted to say that it is it's definitely troubling, this incidental collection, quote-unquote incidental collection, in the context of another number, which is that there are, what, 18,000, 20,000 FBI informants out there, confidential informants out there. Mm. I mean, Lord knows, just the fact that the intelligence community might even be feeding, warrantless surveillance intelligence to even one or two or a dozen of them, it just sends shivers down my spine. Tech dipshits who want a free rein won't be happy about this one. Google is facing the steepest penalty ever doled out by EU antitrust regulators. The company was fined $2.7 billion today. European Commission officials said that the company must stop giving preferential treatment to its own shopping portals in the next 90 days. If it doesn't give such treatment through its search engine, the fine could increase by about twice as much. According to Reuters, the $2.7 billion fine is worth the equivalent of 3% of Google's daily turnover. Google also faces further punishment in unrelated EU antitrust cases, one involving Android's operating system, another involves online search advertising. So, I don't know, maybe European antitrust regulators will solve the San Francisco housing crisis.
I was watching the White House press briefing today, and I mean, this is a pretty big story. Google getting hit with this antitrust fine, I mean, $2.7 billion or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it was brought up at the press briefing, and Sarah Huckabee Sanders is the press secretary today, or she was acting as it today, and just didn't have an answer. I'll have to take that question. We don't have anything to add to it. And it's just like, this should be right in your wheelhouse for the Trump administration, one. Either on either side, you want to take it either A, yeah, let's bust up monopolistic companies in sort of a grassroots, or two, this is an American company being bullied by Europe.
Yeah.
Either way, but they don't. And it just reflects how every day unprepared the White House press shop is for a number of issues. And Josh Earnest, I mean, say what he's pretty good at his job defending the Obama administration. And he'd come out and you could ask him pretty much about any story in the news and he would have a response. They had already discussed it that morning. They had crafted a White House response to it and they were prepared to take a question on pretty much any issue. With the exception of like the 28 pages, there were weeks in which Josh Earnest kept fumbling whether or not Obama thinks the 28 pages should be released. And there were a couple other issues like that. But when it comes to the Trump White House, there's about five issues they're prepared to talk about every White House press briefing. And the rest of them, they just don't know. They just can't speak about it.
You saw the unprofessionalism in the subcommittee hearing I was talking about with Labor Secretary Acosta, who is sort of Republican senators were complaining about undersecretaries not being staffed at the Labor Department. Acosta seemed to be not necessarily complaining, but referencing the fact that the NLRB is not fully filled with Republican nominees. And that's slowing, for example, administration efforts to repeal Obama-era rules, which in my opinion is good because they want to go forward and repeal the joint employer rule, which would hold like McDonald's accountable for its franchise's behavior. But they're not. I mean, the Trump administration is just incompetent. You see it up and down. And I guess the most visible, as you noted, is the press briefing where they just It seems like they fucking – all they read is Ranger Rick.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that most of the focus is on whether or not cameras should be allowed in there, and they should, and maybe members of the press should just dare the White House to start throwing them out by turning the cameras on or whatever. But that's not even the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that you have a White House that every day is not providing any answers on most of the issues and is obfuscating on the rest of the issues. So you need to start holding them accountable in other ways, maybe by shaming them day in and day out. When Sarah Huckabee Sanders doesn't have a response to one of the biggest tech business stories of the day.
Of the year, even.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You should shame her for that.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of administration is this that you aren't able to respond to this? Instead, they're like, okay, we'll take it for the record. Moving on. This is Congressman Jason Chaffetz's last week in Congress. He leaves on Friday, and on his way out, he's proposing a pay increase for members of Congress. In an interview with The Hill, Chaffetz said, quote, "I think a $2,500 housing allowance would be appropriate and a real help to have at least a decent quality of life in Washington if you're going to expect people to spend hundreds of nights a year here." He's talking about $2,500 a month, by the way. Who here individually pays $2,500 a month? No? No takers? It's about three times what I pay a month. So Chaffetz also makes $174,000 a year, which is what you think that would pay for housing while you're in D.C., unless Chaffetz needs an entire house to himself while he's here. This idea won't happen, but I bring it up because it displays just how incoherent Republicans like Chaffetz are. They're against the minimum wage, single-payer health care, free college for the working class, but think that making $174,000 a year isn't enough to live.
Even in Washington, that puts them in the top 20% income bracket. I looked it up earlier today. Top decile for fucking...
Get a basement apartment on Capitol Hill. You'll be fine.
But also remember like a few months ago when he was saying that Americans should choose between their iPhones and health insurance?
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jason Chaffetz. Take your fucking broccoli-ass hair and fuck off back to Utah.
Definitely. And I just say that just as telling was all the libs who responded to Chaffetz saying it was a good idea.
Oh, God.
Saying that we need to pay members of Congress more to prevent them from going through the revolving door, being lobbyists and bankers. Well, if $174,000 isn't enough for you and you want to get rich working on Wall Street, then maybe you shouldn't be a congressperson. Maybe we shouldn't cater to those sorts of people. You want to give members of Congress $1 million a year? Well, you won't get better quality lawmakers. You'll just make Louis Gohmert a millionaire. Assuming he isn't one already.
Who would attach their name to that sort of legislation anyway? Giving lawmakers a $2,500 rent increase.
People who aren't up for re-election again, like Jason Chaffetz.
If you want to take a political risk and, I don't know, close the gap between Wall Street and Congress, fucking increase the taxes on Wall Street.
Yeah.
Fucking increase their fucking taxes.
And why don't you exercise your home rule over D.C. by cracking down on rentiers and doing something about the spiraling out of control rent prices here in the city.
Yeah, or just like create some fucking brutalist, Stalinist fucking dorms. Yeah, for Congress.
Finally, this is my favorite story of the day, maybe the week, maybe the month, maybe my favorite story of the year. Let me set it up a bit. There's a Republican congressman from New York. His name's Chris Collins. He thinks he's a big shot. And he's constantly walking around Capitol Hill bragging to members about how many people he's made millionaires off stock tips. Collins sits on the board of an Australian biotech firm, Innate Immunotherapeutics, and he's been trying to get all his colleagues to buy stock in the company. Scott Wong at The Hill reported in June that half a dozen Republican lawmakers interviewed said that they have heard Collins talking up Innate Immunotherapeutics at official meetings and in informal settings on The Hill. If you get in early, you'll make a big profit, Collins reportedly told another group of House Republicans last summer. That's according to a second GOP lawmaker. A third Republican lawmaker told The Hill that Collins personally pitched him on buying Innate's stock. Now, one person who did purchase stock in the company was Tom Price while he was legislating issues that affected the company. That was a conflict of interest that was raised during Price's confirmation hearings to be Trump's health secretary. So we've got Chris Collins walking around Capitol Hill trying to get everybody to buy the stock. Anyways, here's where the story gets good. Innate Immunotherapeutics, Congressman Collins' hot stock tip to all his buds, their stock crashed today. Completely crashed. Apparently, the company's new drug for multiple sclerosis failed in clinical trials. So the company's stock, which was valued as high as $1.77 a share in January, quickly fell to just 5 cents in one day. It lost 92% of its value. Bloomberg reported that Collins himself lost $17 million in just one day. What a dumb motherfucker. What a dumb idiot. Dude has insider knowledge and still can't make money off the stock market here.
Are we sure he didn't sell his stock before it cratered?
Bloomberg's reporting he lost $17 million. Who knows? I'm taking their word for it here.
Is he on Ways and Means Committee? Is he going to propose some sort of like tax write-off for fucking...
No, but he might be the guy proposing housing stipends for members of Congress pretty soon. That's the show today. Listeners, call our rant line. Leave a message. That number is 202-684-6108. We got sponsors to thank. Chris Simpson, the Congressional Dish podcast hosted by Jen Briney at congressionaldish.com and levelnews.org. You can listen to this episode and all other episodes of our nightly newscast by going to districtsentinel.com. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or tune in by searching for District Sentinel Radio. Leave a review. Give us a rating. Tell your friends to listen. We're back tomorrow. We're in D.C., so you don't have to be.